And it's about 10 seconds after the hour. I'm Ben Brown. This is a Juno Afternoon, this Tuesday, the 14th of June, 2016. Today we have Nikki Love and Joey Lyon from the Association for the Education of Young Children to talk about their Business of Caring workshop. And we also have some guests to talk about traumatic brain injuries and suicide prevention. And Brenda Weaver from Hearthside Books to talk about their galley rally. A few more things, so stay tuned for a Juno Afternoon. Right here after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. People in Indian country are among those sending condolences to family and friends of those killed and wounded in the Orlando shooting at a gay nightclub over the weekend. A statement Monday by National Congress of American Indians Executive Director Jacqueline Peta expressed sorrow and affirmed NCAI support of two-spirit, lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender Americans. Also Monday, Wisconsin's Ho-Chunk Nation lowered flags to half-staff for victims. And the Fire Circle at Haskell Indian Nations University in Kansas was lit to offer a place for prayer and reflection. Haskell student Travis Campbell went to the fire Monday to show respect and is glad the school's administration opened up the space for students.
I think it's fantastic that they are making the effort to acknowledge that something terrible has happened, and it doesn't directly impact the Haskell community, but an acknowledgement of something that's happened to American society as a whole. And it's nice to see that acknowledgement.
Advocates are expressing their support, including Leha Spoonhunter, a Native American youth consultant, and Two-Spirit Native LGBTQ activist. Spoonhunter was among people who attended a White House Pride reception last week, just days before the shooting. He says the community is hurting from the tragedy and needs encouragement.
So many Native youth, Native LGBTQ community members, there's many that are closeted that are afraid to come out because of fear of who they are and homophobia that they may face. It's really a tough time, especially in a month where we're celebrating our identity, our gender identity of who we are.
As people across the country unite with those in Florida, police are continuing their investigation of the Pulse nightclub shooting, which officials say left more than 50 wounded, 49 victims dead, and the suspect killed. Vice President Joe Biden, speaking at the United States of Women Summit today in Washington, D.C., talked about efforts to stop violence against women. He highlighted the years-long work in the Violence Against Women Act, which as a senator, his leadership helped enact in 1994. Efforts include holding offenders accountable and improving the criminal justice response. Biden says things are getting better and gave many examples, including in Indian country.
In Native American communities all across this country, tribal nations can now prosecute non-Indian offenders for domestic violence, dating violence, and violation of protection orders. There are literally hundreds of examples I could list how the Violence Against Women Act has saved women's lives in every state. This progress is real. It's important. Today, it's no longer. There are actually changes.
Biden's remarks come a day after the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in the case U.S. v. Bryant involving domestic violence on tribal lands. Advocates and attorneys say the ruling favors tribes, upholds tribal sovereignty, and will protect domestic violence victims in Indian country. Navajo communities in the Four Corners area are still grappling with the after effects of last year's Gold King mine spill. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency has awarded nearly $500,000 to the Navajo Nation to monitor water quality on the San Juan River, which bore a brunt of the spill. Ryan Heinches reports.
The funds will help the Navajo EPA with sampling river sediment as well as examining contaminants in the tissue of fish. They want to determine if there are any dangers posed by consuming animals caught from the river. Alexis Strauss is the acting regional administrator for the U.S. EPA.
If we can paint a whole picture of watershed health along this part of the San Juan, it helps everybody plan for how best to use water in such a really arid region.
The U.S. EPA allocated $1 million to the tribe last fall for water monitoring and ecological restoration. Agency officials say long-term studies are important to fully understand the impacts of the spill. The incident released 3 million gallons of mine waste into the Animas and San Juan rivers and forced communities on the Navajo Nation to go without water. For National Native News, I'm Ryan Heinches in Flagstaff.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Support by Ramona Farms, offering wholesome and delicious foods from our heirloom crops as our contribution to a better diet for the benefit of all people. We are honored to share our centuries-old farming and culinary traditions online at RamonaFarms.com. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It is 6 minutes after the hour, and I'm Ben Brown, and you're listening to a Juno Afternoon this Tuesday, the 14th of June, which is Flag Day. And it's also the birthday of the United States Army, I discovered watching the legislative session on Gavel to Gavel earlier today. So you learn things when you watch Gavel to Gavel. So our first guests today are Nikki Love and Joy Lyon from the Association for the Education of Young Children, an affiliation with THRED. And they're here to talk about a pretty exciting, innovative new program, which is going to help people get into the business of caring. So Joy and Nikki, welcome to a Juno Afternoon.
Thanks for having us.
And so let's just not wait. I actually heard a PSA about this earlier, but that was the thumbnail, tiny little version. Give us the full unpacked version of what it takes to get into the business of caring.
Sure. Well, we're having a workshop this Thursday from noon until 1 p.m. at our offices that are located in the Juno Empire Building. And this is basically, it's kind of a primer for anyone interested in getting into the field of caring for young children. We'll have our partners and friends from Child Care Licensing with us. We'll have snacks and door prizes and free books to give away and lots of information about getting into the field and also about the supports available. I think when folks think about caring for kids, they think about the regulations and how difficult it can be to achieve all the things that you need to in order to open your doors. But those regulations and things are really about health and safety. It's about best practice for children. And we're here to show you all of the really great things that also come with it. So it's not just hard things, it's fun things. So we talk about how you might set up your program from day to day, you know, activities you do with kids, what the costs involved will be, and also what the savings are and the financial incentives. Like right now we have a quality initiative grant. It's a startup grant that's $1,000 for folks. Once they get through a couple of the hoops and we know that they're on their way and they become licensed, they can apply for that grant. There is also the child care food program that they can join for a group of six kids that may put about $500 to $600 a month in their pocket to help cover the costs of food. If they have higher education, they may be eligible for a HEARTS Award, and that's a monetary award through the city and borough. Things like that. So lots of little pockets of money and lots of support. We have training. We have workshops. So THRED and licensing, we're really here to help you offer a program to children.
Now, we were talking a little bit before we went on the air about why you're doing this, and it's obviously because there is an unmet need for child care in Juneau, probably across Alaska, probably across the country. So talk, if we could, a little bit about the specific statistics that are driving your program, because, I mean, if there was enough child care, you probably wouldn't be taking the time to do this.
Thanks, Ben. Yes. We have right now only about 450 licensed spaces for children in Juneau. And when you think about the numbers of children, you have to think about the both high schools. That's how many children under age five we have in Juneau. So you figure of all those children, about half are in unknown care, because there's only one space for every six children who have all the adults in their home working. And, of course, we know that some people have a great arrangement with a relative or friend or family, and that's great. And we have about 37% of kids that are in that kind of situation. And we know that there's other people that are caring for groups of children and just kind of doing it informally, and that's fine. You can care for up to four children unrelated to you without being licensed. However, we counted it up, and there were about $10,000 a year of that first year of startup that we can help support them through services with THRED, the Child Care Food Program, and then the city of Juneau has really recognized this is a critical piece of our economy, because 15% of the workforce in the state of Alaska, according to the McDowell Impact Study, relies on child care in order to get to work. So we want to attract those young families to grow their families here in Juneau and make us a thriving community. And the workforce, you know, anybody who's tried to hire people realizes, like, oh, if we just had more qualified applicants. And, you know, here's a way with child care, you're building three layers of the workforce all at once. You know, you have the current workforce, the parents that need to get to work. You have the workforce of child care teachers that contribute to the economy. And then you have, the best of all, the future workforce, that when you have really strong, supported, well, you know, nourished children, they grow up to be strong, solid citizens. And so those early years are so critical, that birth to three, 80% of the brain development is completed during that formational 3 years, first 1,000 days of life, we like to say.
And, of course, by having children in safe, licensed, regulated child care placements, you're preventing the likelihood of an adverse experience that's going to cause trauma, that's going to create more difficulty for that individual and society later on in life.
Right, because the children under age five are the most vulnerable to ACEs, adverse childhood experiences, and those experiences last a lifetime. You know, they have more risks for all the problems in life that we have, with whether it be suicide or whether it be you know, smoking or drug use, and, you know, pregnancy, early, you know, teenage pregnancy. Pregnancy is not bad in itself, but right? But we do tell parents, really, plan ahead. If you're thinking about having a child in Juneau, really have a plan to either, like, maybe send for a distant niece to come and live with you for a year, or, you know, really start working a plan even before you get pregnant, because people are often really not aware of how hard it is to find infant care.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once you have a preschooler, you can have some choices. And Thread has this great search tool. You just go to threadalaska.org and, you know, searching for child care. And up pops, you know, just this great, easy-to-use, you know, little flags of where the programs are all over Juneau and Southeast. And you can tell all about them, what their hours are, what their rates are, what, you know, how many children or what ages they care for. So it gives you all the information plus the questions to ask and kind of search, interview questions. So that is just a great support to parents looking for care.
And what sort of a trend is there, if any, of people who are taking care of their own children making the leap into wanting to open up some sort of a center? I'm going to guess that there's no limit. If I had four kids, I could have those four kids plus four kids that weren't related to me. Was that correct?
You could have up to five.
Oh, it's total. Five total. Okay.
Four,
so one of your own plus four unrelated.
Yeah.
Okay.
And even if you're just caring for two kids, there's still so many advantages to just find out about.
Mm-hmm.
So you might want to, you know, we're not judging anyone. Anyone can come and just find out about what, if they're just at all interested or caring for just a few children, is this worth fine checking it out?
Well, part of it is economies of scale. You know, if you have someone who's capable of taking care of his or her own children and is doing pretty good at it, that person is a likely candidate to be able to say, I actually could do this as a small business. Not if, you know, I'm not going to open my best beginnings with 40 kids, but mm-hmm. just something small. And it sounds like the way the regulations are structured, there are definitely different tiers of activity, from small to medium mm-hmm. to large to really large.
And that's another thing the city has done, is make it a lot easier to care for up to 12 children. So you can have up to 12 children if you have a second adult there present in a family home. And that's a really great model, because you have the advantage of saying, oh, you children can go outside and play, and you can continue working on your craft. Or, you know, you have that second adult, which parents like, and just a backup. And economically, it works out really well, because if you have, your tax advantages are huge. We have really good support around helping people get every tax credit that they can, which is a lot, because you can write off your home mortgage and your utilities and your car, and, you know, you kind of get a real big bonus at tax time
mm-hmm.
in the child care if you're working out of your own home. And then, you know, for anybody that's interested in the center, we also have a whole, you know, support system for the people that would like to start a larger center as well.
And do you find that people are on a continuum from, okay, I did my own kids, and then I did a small operation at my house, and that some of those caregivers are actually looking towards a large center-based organization now?
Some people start out, a lot of people start with their own children or the grandchildren or their nieces and nephews, and then they think, oh, well, it'll be even more fun and I can really do a bigger business here, and they do grow. So that's certainly an option.
Excellent. So there's a specific program coming up, and that is going to be this Thursday, and it is at noon to 1. Your office is out in the Empire Building. So let's talk just a little bit more. I know we talked about it at the beginning about that people have to pre-register for that, or because it sounds like within 1 hour, that's a lot of information. So how is that going to unfold at noon on Thursday?
It is. Anybody who's interested can come, and if they can't show up right at noon, that's just fine. They can come anytime during that hour. And in fact, if they can't make it this Thursday, just give us a call and we can set up something, you know, just talking on the phone or set up another time to meet. This is a great opportunity to meet the other players in the field as well. So it's nice. You would potentially be able to meet the staff who may be training you, the licensing folks that you'll have to work with. You'll get to see our offices where the trainings happen. We have a lending library available. So it's just a really nice introduction. It'll be pretty casual. We'll be answering questions. And depending on where folks are in the process, some people walk in our door very aware of the situation and where they are in the process and what they want. And we're going to meet them where they are and you know, take them forward from there. Some people just come to us with the barest idea of, you know, maybe I'll take on a couple of kids, and we'll meet them there and really explain how the process goes.
And are there going to be some success stories? I imagine you've got some testimonials from caregivers who have succeeded in this and can probably help tell those who are afraid, it's not impossible. You can do it. I did it.
That's right. That's right. And we hear it all the time from people that they, you know, they love making a difference in the lives of children and, you know, and families and, you know, and, you know, getting out on a day like this and going on field trips, what's not to like, and doing cooking projects. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then I've seen some of the people that have been in the field for a while and they'll be walking down the street and, you know, the grown-up children will be run up to them and, oh, you know, hey, I was in your program when I was little. And so it's really you make a big impact and you really make a difference. And that's another reason people are passionate about working in early childhood.
And it's also a viable thing to do as an economic activity. So it's win-win.
Absolutely.
That's right. We can make it so.
Well, good. So the program then again is Getting Into the Business of Caring, and it's going to be at noon till 1 this Thursday the 16th at the offices of AEYC out of the Juno Empire Building. But as Nikki was saying, you can call and schedule an independent appointment if that time doesn't work for you. What's the online resource that people should go to if they want to learn more about this before or after Thursday's seminar?
Well, the www.threadalaska.org has all the search tools for parents as well as information about getting into the business of caring. So that's a great website. And then our website at aeyc-sea.org.
Excellent. Any other words of wisdom you would like to share with our listeners this lovely sunny Tuesday afternoon?
We're just really looking forward to meeting you.
Okay, very good. Well, then thank you so much, Nikki and Joy, for coming on a Juno afternoon today. And I hope you have a great turnout at your Business of Caring workshop. And listeners, just think about it. You could be a caregiver this time next week.
Thank you, Ben.
Thanks again, ladies.
What we most often hear is bad news about our teens. That alters what we know is true. Most Alaska teenagers are doing positive things. They're volunteers, role models, and much more. Spirit of Youth tells these stories.
We're basically selling breakfast products and treats for students of KCC.
Seth Isaquase is scurrying around behind the makeshift counter of the Second to None Cafe, which is conveniently located in the hallway where students enter school each morning. Hungry teenagers file by, some buying a muffin or a hot chocolate in that moment, and others placing orders for in-class delivery.
We got more orders today.
Everybody's trying to get in last minute?
Yep, because everything's half off.
After the morning rush, Cephas and his cafe colleagues break down their hallway storefront and move operations to a pair of classrooms. For the next hour, they fulfill orders and make deliveries. Ray Voley is the entrepreneurial and enterprise teacher at Anchorage's King Career Center.
I guess what really impressed me about him is he's from Nigeria, and he mentioned he comes from a society where being in the medical field is highly valued, and so the entrepreneurship isn't necessarily a field that's looked on with a lot of high regard. he was happy to come to this class and to America because he got to really pursue his passion, which is business. He's probably the most mature with it 15-year-old I've ever met.
Cephas' family has a history of operating small businesses since coming to America. He says he plans to follow that path himself.
I like to work hard. To me, I just think working hard is the only way to success.
Among his goals, says Cephas, is to run a hospitality business that in some way includes making customers happy by serving them great food. I'm Shanna Sheehy.
You know of a teenager making a difference where you live? Take some time right now to nominate them for Spirit of Youth. Get more information at spiritofyouth.org.
Listen to this story again at spiritofyouth.org.
So it's about 21 minutes after the hour, and you're still listening to a Juneau Afternoon this Tuesday the 14th. Thought we'd take a quick look at the weather forecast. And the forecast for today, the rest of today, is partly cloudy, but it's pretty sunny outside right now. Tomorrow, partly cloudy in the morning, then becoming sunny, a high from 70 to 76 tomorrow, northwest winds to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with a low around 48. On Thursday, full-on sunny with a high around 71. Southeast winds to 10 miles per hour. Thursday night, mostly clear. Friday, mostly cloudy through the weekend, but only a chance of rain. So pretty great weather. See what you can do to accommodate it and rearrange your schedule so you can get outside and enjoy it, because that's what living in Juneau is all about. Speaking of which, tomorrow, the Juneau Parks and Recreation Wednesday hike is going to be Gastineau Peak, and hikers will meet outside the Mount Roberts Tram building and take off right at 9:30. It says there are two options, to take the tram to the top or to hike to the restaurant from the Mount Roberts Trailhead on Basin Road. So that group will meet at 9:45. Note the time change. You know the rest of the rules. No dogs or firearms. Bring food, water, clothing. And the goal is the top of Gastineau Peak. So that's the community hike tomorrow if you're interested. Or you could go hiking yourself. There's plenty of trails out there. Coming up next, we're going to have Eric Boyer talking about traumatic brain injury and suicide. That'll be after Garrison Keillor's Writer's Almanac here on a Juneau Afternoon.
It's the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 14th of June, 2016, Flag Day. It was on this day, 1777, the Second Continental Congress approved the Stars and Stripes as the flag of the United States. It was on this date, 1966, the Vatican abolished the index of prohibited books, books that Roman Catholics were forbidden to read for fear of endangering their faith or their morals. At one time or another, the index included Copernicus and Galileo, John Locke, Thomas Hobbes, Immanuel Kant, Jean-Paul Sartre, Jonathan Swift, Victor Hugo, Flaubert, Graham Greene. None of Karl Marx's work ever made the list, nor anything written by James Joyce, D.H. Lawrence, or Charles Darwin. It's the birthday of the photojournalist Margaret Bourke White, born in the Bronx, New York, 1904. Famous as a documentary photographer for Life magazine, photographed the liberation of the Buchenwald concentration camp, the partition of India and Pakistan, and many other stories. It's the birthday of the novelist Mona Simpson, born in Green Bay, Wisconsin, 1957. Her father was Syrian. Her mother grew up on a farm in Wisconsin. Before her parents married, they had a son they gave up for adoption. Simpson was born after the marriage. She did not find out until she was 25 years old that she had this brother, and her brother turned out to be Steve Jobs, the co-founder of Apple. Mona Simpson wrote of him, "Even as a feminist, my whole life I'd been waiting for a man to love. When I was 25, I met that man, and he was my brother." She wrote about Steve Jobs in her novel, A Regular Guy. Mona Simpson, who said, "The tincture of life most rarely found in art is happiness." Here's a poem for today by Sonia Johansson, Ode to the Pull-Out Couch. "Which once belonged to your great-grandparents, but belongs to us now, and still works, even if the cushions are pretty well flattened, and the stuffing is coming out from one armrest, and the color, which was probably once cream with red stitching, has become mostly a muddy rust, and which is always called a couch, and never ever a sofa, just as a pocketbook is not a purse, a bureau is not a dresser, and pants are not slacks. Only snooty people on TV would call a couch a sofa, or rich people, or maybe people from away, which we are not. Because if we were any of those, instead of just a pull-out couch, we would have a guest room with a comforter and duvet, which no guests would ever sleep under because they would be staying at a five-star hotel where we would join them for a five-star dinner instead of the supper we cook for our cousins up from Alfred, which makes them still from here and not from away, so they can't afford to go out to dinner, much less afford a fancy hotel room, even if there was a hotel in town, which there is not. And after our supper, and before we wake up early to take them ice fishing, we pull out the couch and give them pillows and blankets and maybe even the granny square afghan, and they get to sleep by the wood stove with the extra cats and know that they are welcome." Ode to the Pull-Out Couch by Sonia Johansson, used by permission of the poet here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Progressive Insurance, with insurance for cars, home, boat, motorcycles, RVs, and commercial vehicles at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. And by Organic Valley, a co-op of family farmers bringing organic half-and-half to America's morning coffee since 1988. Organic Valley, bringing the good. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
And it's 30 minutes, almost 31 minutes after the hour. I'm Ben Brown. This is a Juno Afternoon. Today is Tuesday, the 14th of June. And our next guest today is Eric Boyer, who's here to talk about a serious subject, but one that needs to be talked about, which is an opportunity for a community conversation about traumatic brain injury and suicide. And I guess traumatic brain injury is kind of a subtopic. Suicide is the larger topic. So welcome to a Juno Afternoon, Eric.
Thank you. It's good to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
And, so this event is going to be taking place today. The community talk is.
Yes.
The opportunity to be compassionate and prevent bad things from happening is not just today. It's every day for the rest of our lives.
Absolutely.
But go ahead and tell us about your specific talk on how traumatic brain injury can probably increase the risk of suicide and things that can be done to address
yes.
that problem.
Yeah, definitely. Traumatic brain injury is definitely a risk factor, and it's gained a lot of prominence in the last several years here in America. We'll be doing this talk tonight, 5:30 to 6:30, at Bartlett Hospital's admin building, second floor, room 204. Please come. You're welcome. We'll fit you in. And it'll be an opportunity to kind of look at what traumatic brain injury looks like and also kind of comparing that to suicide, because there's a lot of shared risk factors there that put somebody at a heightened risk. Just to let you know, the military has done a really good job of assessing the number of traumatic brain injuries that have occurred to American military over the last 15 years. And in that time frame, they have diagnosed 334,000 traumatic brain injuries. So that's in the 15-year period, we have 334,000 Americans among us. Many of us are family members, friends, neighbors, coworkers, who have experienced a traumatic brain injury. There was a really good study done in Canada by a Dr. Reppelmeyer, who looked at a sample group of 224,000 individuals within a healthcare group, and they looked at traumatic brain injury and suicidality in people who actually took their own life. What they found is when traumatic brain injury was one of the symptoms, one of the risk factors for an individual, it raised their risk of suicide threefold. So we know there's many factors out there that increase the risk for somebody, and that's another one that we've got really good evidence now. And so we need to be aware of that from our community and providers so that they can screen for that and get appropriate resources.
Absolutely. So is there any sort of decline in the increased prevalence of suicide from the date of a traumatic brain injury, or does it remain – once you've had a traumatic brain injury, does that risk increase stay with you in perpetuity?
I'd say the science and research is still out there being done on this, but what they do know, the study I mentioned last year, 2015, in Canada – they said the risk from a mild traumatic brain injury, when you look at the body of traumatic brain injuries, the seriousness ranges from mild, moderate to high. Well, over 80% of the traumatic brain injuries that are received that we know of are in the mild category.
And would that be concussions?
Yes. So you still are receiving concussion, but your loss of consciousness is under 30 minutes or less. So it appears like the degree of risk is less, and of course the trauma to the brain is less, but it can have lasting impact in terms of headaches, memory loss, ability to maintain relationships, and those are all factors that we look at when somebody's dealing with suicidality. So what the Canadian study looked at was an average of 6 years that the mild traumatic brain injury played a role in somebody's increased risk for suicidality. So I would say that it's a number of years, and what community members, family members, and professionals should know is to make it just a part of the routine to ask questions around their feelings, how they're sleeping, how their health is overall, their contacts with other people, and then keeping in mind past screenings for traumatic brain injury, continuing to do that, because I think what happens is as we age, some of those things can come to the forefront. We really don't understand everything that's going on in terms of the biochemistry of the brain,
mm-hmm.
but we know that those things kind of rise to the surface. And we start seeing mental health issues, use of substances like alcohol, and those can have a direct link to the traumatic brain injury. But if we're not addressing the traumatic brain injury, then we're not really getting to the root of where those issues are coming. So that's what's a really important part.
And I imagine the substance use might, in fact, obviously it's a medication thing, but it might mask the underlying problem
yes.
in some cases.
Yes.
And then when it goes away or when it spikes, that's when you have sort of a ticking time bomb. Now, with traumatic brain injuries, some types of injury can heal with time. Others probably get stopped in their tracks. And so part of the diagnosis is what kind of traumatic brain injury it is and what is the healing possibility and what is the lack of it.
Yeah. So in Alaska, just so you know, we do not have any board-certified brain injury specialists that currently reside and work in Alaska. So
not even a one, not even up
one.
In Anchorage.
No. So Providence Hospital out of Anchorage actually contracts with one out of the Midwest, Dr. Amy Murphy. And she comes up several times a year, does technical medical consultation and public awareness training for professionals and community members. So that's definitely a gap in our communities. But what we do have out of Anchorage is a nonprofit organization called the Alaska Brain Injury Network. Their sole purpose is to navigate and support families and family members through how to get the proper needs and assessment. And like you say, depending on mild, moderate, high, the track of an evidence-based treatment for them, many times they might have to leave the state and go to one of the, you know, brain injury centers in the lower 48, which there's a number of them that are really good. And they will help a family kind of put their mind at ease, you know, give them the support they need, get them the help while they're here, and then see if they need to go outside.
And, of course, with the insurance market in Alaska the way it is today, most providers are not just going to say, sure, go do it and send us the bill. They're going to want that initial referral from someone who's
yes.
a regular provider in Alaska before
yes.
that happens.
Yeah, and Brain Injury Network, they have partnerships with many of the medical hospitals and clinics around the state so that they can make kind of those connections. But you're right. It definitely is something that the earlier it can be, you know, screened, recognize and get the help and get the insurance, because that is a process. And so, you know, part of the effort is there's free screening tools that are called the OSU out of Ohio State and the RiverMead. And those are evidence-based tools that medical practitioners can use to actually screen their short forms. They can screen for traumatic brain injury and giving the evidence that there's something going on here, and then we can do more either through meeting doctors that we have up here or referring them outside.
Well, this is obviously not a light topic for people to go to at the Bartlett Hospital boardroom tonight.
Yes.
Are you expecting to have a mix of medical professionals and then also maybe community members who have a family member that has had a traumatic brain injury or even someone that they're concerned might have
yes.
had one?
Yes. That would be best case scenario is when we get a good, you know, kind of interdisciplinary mix of community members and professionals who come together. And we take a few things, learn, and then, you know, one of the, I think, beautiful things in Alaska is we have a small population, so we get to know each other and we form those connections so that we can support each other, because we need that in such a geographically large state.
Well, and one of the reasons I asked the question is if some people who are would be the family members or the actual patients who need heightened awareness of these services and a better diagnosis so they can figure out what they're dealing with. If they're not able to make it tonight, hopefully you're going to be imparting some pearls of wisdom to the medical providers there, because
yes.
they're really, you know, they're the connectors. They're going
yes.
to connect this brain injury network up in Anchorage with a patient here in Juneau or from elsewhere in Southeast
yes.
to try to get them onto that track where they need to be going.
Yes, so we want to hook them up with those resources. Also knowing that the Department of Public Safety here with the state of Alaska, they have a Rural Veterans Health Access Program, which is helping to fund me being down here providing this support. And that is federal money that's helping trying to increase the health access for our veterans. And part of the benefit of that is we get to include the whole population of our state in that support, not just veterans. But we're really happy to provide that level of support at a veterans level. But giving out those resources so they can know there's people there in the state, private, nonprofit organizations to get that support and help.
And, of course, it's very easy to think, okay, traumatic brain injury, most of these people are veterans, but it really could be from people who played football or
yes.
were boxing or fell down a mountain or they rolled a car.
Absolutely.
I mean, it could happen to anyone. But
yes.
speaking to the veterans population, I'll just briefly mention, I am the chairman of our State Arts Council, and I just got some really good news from the National Endowment for the Arts this morning, but the Healing Arts Program at Fort Belvoir and Walter Meade Army Hospital is going to be expanded to seven other locations. And Joint Base Elmendorf Richardson has actually made the list for that expansion project.
Excellent.
So there's probably going to be some arts of healing opportunities, which would be for traumatic brain injury and other veterans who are returning. Hopefully in the next year or so, that's going to be brought online up at J-Bear. And we obviously have a very globally traveled military population in Alaska. People move here, they serve here, then they go overseas, but they come back to Anchorage.
Yes.
And to have those resources there is really kind of an exciting thing. So
it really is.
Well, so again, this is going to be today from 5:30 to 6:30 in the boardroom in the administration building at Bartlett Regional Hospital.
Room 204.
And some people don't really easily distinguish between the administration building and Rainforest Recovery Center and all the other buildings on the hospital. Johnson Youth Center, you can end up in there.
Yes.
If you're not careful. So will there be signs when people get near the hospital that indicate this is where this meeting is?
You know, we don't have a sign there, but as you go up the driveway, you'll pass the Johnson Youth Center on the left,
mm-hmm.
and the very next driveway goes to the left of the admin building.
Okay.
And they could park right there in the first parking lot or the one past there. And the doorways on either side of the building will take you up to the second floor.
So don't go up to the main hospital.
No.
Don't go up to the emergency room because you'll have overshot your mark if you go
right.
up there.
Hopefully they'll redirect you.
Absolutely. So, Eric, is there any sort of an online resource that listeners could look at if they are interested in learning more about traumatic brain injury generally, about suicide prevention, about the nexus between the two?
Yes. So actually, the Veterans Administration has some excellent recorded webinars and fact sheets about traumatic brain injury and suicide. And then also, it's a long acronym, but it's the Defense Veterans Brain Injury Center, DVBIC for short. But they have excellent resources as well. So, you know, just so people know, Veterans Administration definitely gets some bad press these days. But you know what? They are putting a lot of resources into the research with some known experts around the country to really look at what we can do to support our veterans and their families and moving along that process. And this is a big part of that.
Absolutely. Well, I don't think anyone would say that, okay, just because there have been some problems with the Veterans Administration, we should just give up on it.
That's right.
I think, if anything, the heightened scrutiny and some of the real bad shortfalls in some of the facilities in Arizona, there were some real horror cases.
Yes.
If anything, that investment now in cleaning up those problems should hopefully pay some really good rewards for really good service for our veterans in the coming years.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, Eric Boyer here in Juneau to help host a meeting about the community talk on traumatic brain injury and suicide. That'll be this evening, 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. At the Bartlett Hospital Administration Building in the boardroom. And any other words that you'd like to share with our listeners this afternoon, Eric?
Well, you know, things like traumatic brain injury and suicide are tough topics. I'd say the biggest takeaway is those are two areas that we need to, across the board, take seriously, know that they do have an impact on an individual's ability to feel and think, love and laugh, and the way we can really support them is just forming partnerships and just letting them know they're not alone in this, and we can support, walk with them. And there's resources out there. We just got to know that and connect with them.
It's a big problem, but there are solutions.
Yes.
Very good. Thank you so much, Eric Boyer. I hope you have a great crowd for your meeting tonight.
This is Bird Note. On the way to his fatal encounter in Hawaii, the explorer James Cook and the crew of the ship Resolution spent most of April 1778 at anchor in Nootka Sound, off present-day British Columbia. The inhabitants of what is now Vancouver Island were eager to trade with the Englishmen, offering them luxurious furs and other precious commodities. And birds, noted Cook, in great numbers. Among the feathered treasures was a new hummingbird. The discovery of this rusty-colored sprite, which the natives called Zazin, extended the known range of this tropical family surprisingly far to the north and west. According to the British ornithologist Thomas Pennant, who wrote the formal descriptions of many of the birds that returned on Cook's ships, some of those hummingbirds were delivered to the crew still breathing. The natives, Pennant wrote, brought them to our navigators alive, with a long hair fastened to one of their legs. That detail was omitted from the official report of Cook's voyages. But it's a striking image, a little red bird surrounded by curious sailors, captive at the end of their tenuous tethers. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Calling all who run, walk, or wheel to join KTOO for Only Fools Run at Midnight on June 25th. This year's proceeds will benefit public media in Juneau. Start planning your costume or your team theme to compete for prizes at 11 p.m. at Centennial Hall. T-shirts for the first 550 to pre-register, and registration is available now at the Nugget Alaskan Outfitter, the Alaska Club, Habit Health and Fitness, or online at ktoo.org.
It's 46 minutes after the hour. Today's Tuesday, the 14th of June. I'm Ben Brown, and you're listening to A Juneau Afternoon. And our next guest today is Brenda Weber, and she's here from Hearthside Books and to talk about various things, but most especially the Galley Rally. So welcome to A Juneau Afternoon.
Well, thank you.
And tell me about it. I was just mentioning before we went on the air, I don't know what the Galley Rally is, but it sounds fun, but I'm about to find out.
Well, as you know, galley can have several meanings according to the dictionary, but in the publishing world, a galley is an advanced copy of a book prior to publication and prior to being able to be for sale. And so what the publishers do is they send us these galley copies in hopes that we're going to read them, love them, and order them. Well, we get dozens and dozens and dozens a month.
Mm-hmm.
And so we thought there's absolutely no way we can read them all. But so we created a galley rally, what we call a galley rally because it's nice and kind of rhymey and memorable. And what a galley rally, our galley rally is, it's an advisory panel, kind of a customer advisory group that people can come into the Valley Nugget Mall store and sign up for. And on the second Saturday of every month, we put out galleys, copies. And the ones that we're doing right now are what they call young adult for ages 12 and up, through teenager, and I know a lot of adults that like the what they call the YA novels and things like that. So, I mean, who doesn't love Harry Potter?
I was just going to say, if there's some Harry Potter involved, you read my mind.
Rick Riordan, things like that. But there's also, you know, Sarah Moss and other authors, and some of the new authors that come are up and coming. And so what we do is we put out a table, we offer them up. You just, if you're signed up, you can come and check out up to three of them. You bring them back in a month. It's the second Saturday of every month. You bring them back in a month with a little blurb saying if you liked it, if you didn't like it, why, and if you really want to make a recommendation, then when we order it, we can pop that in with your permission on our customer recommendation shelves. It helps advise us, get our pulse on Juneau and who likes what and what would be worthy of carrying, but it also gives people an opportunity to get sneak previews of books.
Well, I can relate. I don't do a lot of DJing here other than hosting the show, but back when I was doing music shows here, it's very similar. When you're a public radio station, you get stacks and stacks and stacks of CDs from music companies that want you to play them on the air so that people will listen to the songs of the artists that they represent and go out and buy their discs. And there's only so much you can listen to before it becomes overwhelming. So I applaud you for this creative method of involving the reading public of Juneau and trying to get their feedback. How long have you been doing the galley rallies?
We've been doing the galley rallies since April. We just started it up. And it doesn't cost anyone anything to come in and get them. We're not selling them. They just need to come in and check out. And then we give them a notice that, hey, the next galley rally is coming up. You know, for instance, I think it's July 9th is the second Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
And
Saturday.
Or Saturday, I'm sorry, Saturday. I just got done with the Rotary Club, so.
and I guess if it's the second Saturday, if someone got through his or her books before, they could probably bring them back in. You wouldn't say they don't want them back?
They can certainly bring them back in, or they can keep them and just come in the next second Saturday and bring us their blurbs of or their recommendations.
And how is participation? I mean, because I didn't realize this is really quite new. If you just started in April. May, this is really this is only the second chance for people to bring their books back in June of this year. So about how many readers are you expecting this Saturday? I guess all the ones who checked books out last time, but how many is that?
Right. We have a couple dozen people so far, and it continues to grow as word gets out. And we're hoping that the word gets out because the more readers that we have, the better informed we are of who likes what and what people think would sell or what they think is a worthy author of carrying.
And, of course, you know, going to our Chamber of Commerce's Look Local, Local First mantra, you know, this is a good chance to support local business. Because if you go online, you know, if you go buy a book on Amazon, there are going to be reader reviews there. I mean, that's kind of part and parcel of the way things are sold and bought these days.
Yes, yes. And we, our, some of our best sellers are when we have staff reviews mm-hmm. on our shelves and if and staff recommendations, and we all write a little thing about what the book's about, you know, just a paragraph or so. And there's always, that's always the busiest shelf in our store, and it's coming very quickly to our customer as we have customer reviews. But that doesn't bar customers from coming in and writing reviews for any book that we have, and we would love to have that happen.
Outstanding. And I'm sure many listeners are, of course, familiar with Dee Longenbaugh's Alaska Book Review, you know, which is a weekly feature here on Morning Edition. But this is kind of a chance to be your, an amateur book reviewer and shape public opinion. So have you selected, you said it's young adult themed books are going to be available, the galleys will be available this Saturday. Have you scoped out the second Saturdays for the rest of the year, different themes, or are you just kind of doing that as the months approach?
We bring out the books that are going to be coming out in the next 2 or 3 months but haven't been released yet. And so it's whatever publishers have sent us. They've already been vetted. These are not the final publishing copies, but they are as close as you can get.
Mm-hmm.
You
it's
might
not
have
the first
a
first draft.
It's not the first draft. It is the final draft before they go through and say, "Oh, look, somebody noticed a misspelling or something." But it is the complete book.
Excellent. Is there a website? Does Hearthside Books have an online presence where people can go and learn more about this, or should they call you if they have more questions or want to express interest?
They can call us. Our mall store, of course, would have a bit more information. The downtown store right now is kind of busy with the tourist season. They can call 789-2750, or they can go online to hearthsidebooks.com.
Okay, very good.
And it's right there on the website.
Excellent. So that's coming up this Saturday, the galley rally.
Actually, it was last Saturday.
It was last
and
Saturday.
And the next one is July 9th.
Okay, I'm sorry. So then if you we're going to go this Saturday, too bad you lost out. But you could, like, as Brenda said, you could always go out there and write a review, irrespective of if it's galley rally weekend.
Right, and you can always sign up. Come in and just say, "I want to sign up for galley rally." And that way you'll get an email blast a couple days before to remind you that it's coming up.
Excellent. Now, before we wrap up here, you had mentioned briefly before we went on the air there was something you wanted to say about the Rotary Club of Juneau.
Well, I want to give a shout-out to the Downtown Rotary Club. They are helping fund, and they just gave me a check to help fund our African Library Project, which helps cover shipping and purchasing of any books to make up for the 1,000 books. And we just sent, and I just have confirmation of shipping from the African Library Project that we shipped 1,129 books or something this year to a school in Ghana. And so I just really want to express my appreciation for that.
Well, they do good work at the Downtown Rotary Club, and so you are right to thank them publicly for doing that good work.
Yeah, and the only other thing I want to mention is we are going to be having a Potter party for the 8th Harry Potter that's coming up on, and the party will set for July 30th. We're going to start at 9 p.m. But the sneak preview, if anyone's listening, is if you put in a prepaid special order, the first 100 prepaid special orders for that book prior to July 16th, will receive a 10% discount.
All right. So get out your broomstick and your wand and ride on over and put in that pre-order for the new Harry Potter book.
Yes, we're going to be closing our doors at 6 and reopening at 9 p.m. and going through midnight.
Exactly. Okay, well, good. Well, then that sounds like a lot of fun. Voldemort won't be there. Everyone else will. I mean, no, I wasn't supposed to say his name, but I won't say it again. Well, anything else you'd like to share with our listeners this afternoon, Brenda?
The only thing I can think of is the other non-book events that we're having. We are planning in August and September are back-to-school success little mini seminars for parents to come in and how to set up your homework areas, how to read with your kids, how to get homework support, things like that. Just FYI for parents, kind of fun things to do.
Excellent. All right. Well, I want to thank you very much, Brenda Weaver, for sharing some of the good goings-on at Hearthside Books. And it's the 9th of July is the next galley rally.
That's true.
Okay,
thank
very
you.
Good. Have a good afternoon.
Thank you.
Mm. just about 4 minutes before the hour. I'm Ben Brown. You've been listening to a Juno Afternoon this Tuesday, the 14th of June. The music we've been enjoying is Kanda Bongo Man, Zing Zong. And I thought it was appropriate for a beautiful Tuesday afternoon here in Alaska's capital city. So again, the weather, as I mentioned briefly before, is very nice. It's going to be partly cloudy or sunny through the end of the week, it looks like. Tomorrow, a high from 70 to 76 degrees. Not very much wind, and just a chance of rain heading into the weekend. So embrace the beauty that is Alaska, and get outside and enjoy it. Thanks so much for listening. And tune in to a Juno Afternoon tomorrow, where there will be more interesting members of the community talking about fun and exciting things that are here to be done in the capital city. Thanks again for listening.